Hi, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly Wellness Update podcast, where I once again bring you the health news that you can use. Well, we're winding down another year here, and of course I have some interesting stories for you. First up is an herb called horse chestnut. Now, horse chestnut is a novel herb. I've always liked it for a long time now because it is so good at helping circulation, fluid retention issues. Studies long ago showed it was as effective as support stockings at getting fluid out of the legs. And it works. Basically, it has a compound in it called Eschen, which heals and strengthens the veins. And it literally repairs them. So it gives more vascular integrity. So as you get older, you have problems, whatever, your veins start becoming leaky in the context of other problems, but you can't get fluids back up out of the legs. They leak. It's like a leaky structure. And the water then pools in the lower extremities. This, of course, then puts more strain on your heart. And so we go. So that's the primary use of that. But now, this horse chestnut herb has been, at least a couple of animal studies, very interesting, showing that it's good for weight management and brain health. And it just goes to show you that any nutrient that really generally works for something really well, typically has a lot of other properties, and these would be in the anti-inflammatory as well as the antioxidant categories, and maybe even in the metabolic categories. So we're seeing a convergence of, the more science we apply to nutrition and test things, the more we see, how broad some nutrients are. Anyway, with the horse chestnut, in an animal study where they're feeding mice, high-fat diets for 5 weeks, which through their leptin and cholesterol way out of whack, giving them horse chestnut reduced their leptin levels by 31% and increased their protective HDL cholesterol by 17% despite being on a high-fat diet. So the brain signaling had a lot less leptin resistance, a lot more efficient, and that's, of course, good news. So it looks like horse chestnut is yet another nutrient that may assist in the weight management efforts. Another study with horse chestnut and a high-fat diet in animals, this one was testing changes in liver health, and it found that the horse chestnut maintained the cellular antioxidant glutathione levels in liver cells. Glutathione, of course, is the major backbone antioxidant in all living cell systems. And so very, very important that nutrients prop that up. Many antioxidants contribute to that process, but here is yet another one. Then we have a different issue with the carotid arteries, and in this particular experiment, the scientists induced occluded carotid arteries so that animals would have a stroke. And then a half an hour after the stroke, the animals were given horse chestnut once a day for 3 days, and then they were done. Then they did detailed testing on their the animals, and the ones that were given horse chestnut had significantly better memory and learning. And then they analyzed their brains. They unfortunately have to kill them off, but they do that, and they look inside the brain and see what's going on, and they analyze the gene signaling, and they found that the horse chestnut animals had a lot less brain damage. And that was consistent with their behavioral responses. And the analysis of gene arrays showed that they had significantly reduced inflammation, and that the horse chestnut actually boosted repair gene signaling. So this is all kinds of interesting stuff from this one nutrient, and it's just part of what it does. But, it's, as I said, horse chestnut's famous for helping strengthen the actual circulatory system integrity and thereby improve fluid retention issues. But here we see a lot of other useful things that the herb is good for. Hawthorn berry, kind of a related compound. Hawthorn berry is a heart tonic. It has been known for that for a very long time. And it, of course, has a very well-documented ability to help patients with the first stages of what's called heart failure, where the heart cannot keep up with demands. And now we have a new study showing that hawthorn, it has a very distinct calming effect on the brain and can even lower LDL cholesterol. So those are a couple more findings for the hawthorn berry. Hawthorn helps reduce anxiousness and hyperness. Now, it's always been a cardiovascular tonic, and of course, to be a tonic to the cardiovascular system, it's not a stimulant, obviously. It has to have some relaxing properties. But here we showed that the researchers showed it actually had analgesic-type properties in the central nervous system and seemed to enhance the natural production of opiates in the brain. So that's good news. I mean, you know, natural production of opiates, generally that's exercise, laughing, sex. Those are pretty much your options. Here's a nutrient that helps. So that's it's always good to have nutrients that can assist in reduction of anxiousness and even pain if we're talking about the opiate system. And in another study with the hawthorn, the animals were fed a high cholesterol diet for 8 weeks, and this of course induced a significantly elevated LDL cholesterol and plaque accumulation in some of the arteries of some of the animals. So then out of all these animals that they were testing, they took these ones that actually had plaque accumulation. So they were working with a baseline, and then they divided those three plaque accumulating animals into three groups and continued them on the high cholesterol diet. And they treated one of the groups with a statin drug. They treated another group with hawthorn berry, and they had, you know, the third group was simply the control group. And in both the statin and hawthorn berry groups, they lowered the triglycerides and improved the ratio between LDL cholesterol and total cholesterol, even though they're on a high cholesterol diet. But only the hawthorn berry, not the statin, actually lowered LDL cholesterol. So in this model of diseased animals, it was just the hawthorn berry. So hawthorn berry has a couple of, besides being a heart tonic, is that, you know, actually helpful to not only relaxing the nervous system, calming it, but also is another angle on managing the cholesterol issue. So, again, we're just seeing more nutrients with more action. I think we had a study out this week on grape seed extract, and I like this one because it showed it was able to actually rejuvenate brain cells. Now, we know from the research that's going on with grape seed extract and Alzheimer's that grape seed extract enters the brain, and while it's in the brain, it protects brain cells from damage. In other words, once brain cells start getting free radical damage, they start to unfold, literally, their membranes start to unravel, and then they become sticky, and then they start forming plaques, and then you've got, you know, the plaquey tangles of Alzheimer and cognitive decline and so on. And so we know that the grape seed extract has a benefit to that aspect of it. But in this particular testing that they were doing, they took middle-aged mice and gave them grape seed extract, and they found that the supplement actually helped the mice generate new brain cells and strengthen the existing flexibility of networks that were associated with memory in the hippocampus region, or the memory region of the brain. And so this is saying that, well, grape seed extract is not just helping the stability of the cells from unfolding, it's actually helping them to maintain usefulness. It's even helping to generate new ones. Wow. You know, that's another good angle on nervous system support. The autophagy theory of life extension. This is now something, this is going to be a big story in the years to come. It's a fairly simple idea. You take out the trash or die a cluttered death. Now you know, some of us may live in messy homes or messy rooms, and maybe we can get along, messy offices, I don't know. But you know, it's not quite so efficient, and so there's a certain amount of mess that happens where you just can't get along. I mean, if your kitchen is too messy, you can't cook in it, you can't function in it, and you got to get cleaned up, you got to get the trash taken out, and so it is for every single cell everywhere in your body. And so your cells have this gobbling up process called autophagy. And now the life extension people, the scientists in this field, are getting very interested because how a cell recycles its debris, they've now discovered that it's using a lot of similar mechanisms to how life extension works inside of a cell. So we know when certain genes like SIRT2-1 are activated inside of cells, they live longer. But there's a lot of other technical sort of gene signaling. It's kind of hard to explain. But the bottom line is that this process that is required to clean up your cells uses a lot of the same gene pathways that life extension uses. And the researchers are noting that nutrients like resveratrol and curcumin actually help this autophagy process work better. And, of course, I reported not too long ago that the researchers at the USDA showed that blueberries turn on this process in the brain. So these are normal house cleaning chores. They're required to keep up everything. But in addition to that process working efficiently, they use similar and parallel circuitry that involve with life extension. So there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. It's not just cleaning up, it's cleaning up and living longer. And so this is going to become a new theory of aging, much like the original free radical theory of aging. I mean, there's a lot of interesting theories of aging. And most of them have elements of workability and elements of truth, because these are things that tend to go wrong as people get older. But this is another one that's going to fall into that category, and I think it will gain a lot of popularity in the years to come. So it's the autophagy theory of life extension, and you may be hearing about it here first. I'm sure you'll be hearing about it other places as time goes along. But it's going to be interesting, and it's a story I certainly plan to follow. I think it's a big story. All right, what else do we have here on the news scene? Undulocenic acid helps bone building. Well, undulocenic acid, like caprylic acid and lauric acid, is a medium-chain fatty acid best known for its germ-killing properties. So these medium-chain fats, when they come in contact with the cell membranes of things like Candida albicans and many bacteria, they interact with the cell membranes of these germs, especially if the germs have formed biofilms and they're in hostile formation, and they disband them. They get in the way of them. And so that's, you know, we've known that for a number of years, and that's why these medium-chain fatty acids, they're completely harmless to human cells, and they're very damaging to things like Candida albicans. Anyway, the researchers just showed that this nutrient is good at stimulating the bone-building osteoblasts. It actually, they've shown it turns on the enzyme alkaline phosphatase, which is a sign that bone building is going on. And it turns on osteocalcin, which is making biologically active the process by which calcium uses vitamin K to attach to bone. It's actually activating that process. So by several mechanisms, what we thought was just a medium chain fat seems to have very interesting properties. So, of course, individuals with Candida albicans, they're often struggling with bone health as well, because the toxicity and the stress of chronic Candida albicans, especially if it's been ebbing and flowing over the course of a lifetime, which is certainly the case for people with ongoing sinus problems and ebbing and flowing digestive problems, they're almost always dealing with an element of that. The acid pH of those problems tends to leach calcium out of the bones over the course of one's lifetime. So most of the individuals who've wrestled with these chronic subclinical or active acute infections for many years struggle with bone health as they get older due to this fact. And here we see a nutrient that's going to contribute to helping balance both problems. So there's obviously a lot of good Candida albicans nutrients, and there's a lot of good bone-building nutrients. Here we have undulocenic acid. Helps two birds with one stone, and certainly would make good for part of a program here. Coenzyme Q10 protects the kidneys. Now, of course, we know CoQ10 is a very good energizing nutrient. It was probably the first great anti-aging nutrient back in the 90s, because, very simply put, as cells get older, CoQ10 levels go down. And if you can keep cell energy production up, for which CoQ10 is required, then cells live longer. So that's pretty fairly straightforward. But here we see CoQ10, which of course is known as a cardiovascular protectant. Here it's showing protection. A variety of studies show protection to the kidneys. Now the kidneys, of course, are a weak link in the cardiovascular chain. When the kidneys go, the blood pressure tends to go up. We get salt sensitivity, get swelling from salt abnormally. And, you know, one thing leads to another. We get a lot more free radical damage in the kidneys. The kidney filtering system is injured. A lot of times if a person's blood sugar is going up, that filtering system is clogged, coated with sugar. Advanced glycation end products, you know, it's kind of cementing what should be like a screen that's filtering things. It gets cemented. This is the wear and tear of kidney damage. It's all free radical generated within the kidneys. And in this particular experiment with rats, they first remove one of the kidneys. That automatically places duress on the remaining kidney, and then they expose the kidneys to various stressors. In this first experiment, they exposed the animals to high salt intake to the point of increased blood pressure, and it significantly noted free radical damage. So they take this sort of kidney handicapped mouse, and then they stress its kidneys and notice that, yes, indeed, they are stressed. And in the group, they have a control group, and then they have a group that was given the ubiquinol form of CoQ10. That's kind of the more active, newer form of it. And the group that was given the Q10 and on the high-salt diet, remember, this is the little mouse with one kidney, didn't develop high blood pressure, didn't develop the free radical damage. The CoQ10 completely protected the kidneys. And from actually what is one of the most common forms of kidney stress in society today. And then we had another study, and this was with regular Q10, and the chemo drug cisplatin was used to, which, you know, one of its known toxic side effects is kidney damage. So when you're going in for chemo and you use that drug, you know, the doctors have to keep watching how much can the person take before their kidneys are injured and we can't do it anymore. At any rate, the cisplatin damage, which is typical, which is specifically kidney damage amongst others, but it's always kidney damage, when they're given CoQ10, the kidney damage is stopped. So here we have salt stressing the kidneys, stop, and then we have an actual drug, a chemical toxin stressing the kidneys, stopped by CoQ10, turning off the core inflammatory gene signal NF-kappa-B, and reducing the free radical generating form of nitric oxide, that's inducible nitric oxide, iNOS. And those are two potent issues that the CoQ10 addresses. Anyway, you preserve your kidneys, you're going to live longer, that's for darn sure. And CoQ10, that's another angle on how it works. All right, I pose the question, can blueberries protect against Alzheimer and Parkinson's disease? We had a professor, his name is Douglas Kell at the University of Manchester over there in England, publishing about a 65-page article, which actually I have a link to it, so you can read the whole darn article on my website if you want to. But anyway, he makes the point that iron becomes uncontrolled as a person ages, and the this is a common problem because the iron then interacts and starts a free radical generation process going, especially hydroxyradicals, which are of some of the most damaging free radicals, start coming about from this, activates inflammatory gene signaling, and leads to a cascade of many problems, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, many other diseases. He's got quite a long list of these diseases that are affected by this mechanism. And he's also quite excited about his discoveries, which is that blueberries and purple berries and even green tea, but he really likes the blueberries, because they chelate or bind up iron in the brain, they can protect against free iron becoming problematic to the brain or to other systems in the body, and thus can have the potential effect of stopping diseases at a rather fundamental and rather simple level, actually. Now, don't get me wrong here about iron. Iron is very, very important for your health, but iron is always kept in a ferritin cage, and then it enters into metabolism, and it's controlled. So iron is kind of like a tiger in the cage, a vital tiger for functioning in the human body, but has to be kept in check. And what he's saying is that as you age, ability to keep the tiger in the cage is not so good anymore. So you have iron systems leaking iron. It's like tigers getting out of the cage, running around and inducing damage. And if you have a nutrient that can go and mop up tigers running around where they're not supposed to be, that would be helpful because then they couldn't be damaging things. And according to him, this might prevent, it might be a common theme behind a lot of diseases. And we had blueberries as a chief tiger mopper upper iron chelating nutrient. He points out that grape seeds and red wine would not work by the same mechanism. They'd work by different mechanisms. But this is a mechanism that would have preserving effects on the human physiology by not exposing it to damage in the first place. And this is kind of interesting stuff, and another reason that blueberries help protect the nervous system. Last story of the week was whey protein lowers blood pressure. This was the first time this has ever been reported. Of course, we know, and those of you who listen to me know I'm a fan of whey protein. I think it's a very good metabolic activator. It has a lot of advantages. It activates the immune system. It activates bone building. It helps keep you full. There's just so many things that it does that are helpful. In this particular study, it was a human study with 6-week intervention in young men and women who were at the early stages of developing blood pressure problems. So they were either they're above 120 over 80. They're heading up. Some of them are maybe up at 150 over 90, but they're moving up in that direction. And they were given 28 grams of whey protein a day as part of their diet for 6 weeks. And those who had, slightly elevated higher numbers and lower numbers, the systolic and the diastolic blood pressure, both numbers were lowered on average 8 points in 6 weeks, basically bringing them significantly down into, in some cases, normal or very normal. This wasn't in advanced blood pressure as a treatment. This was in initial phases of problems in younger people. So this probably would work in older people, but this testing was done in younger people. Anyway, it's human data supporting the use of whey protein to help lower blood pressure. That's the first time that's ever been reported. We've had other reports of whey protein obviously helping metabolism. And in this case, secondary noticing was done, and it also lowered LDL cholesterol. That was not the primary focus of the study, but it was also observed that the individuals with elevated cholesterol had lower cholesterol at the end of the study, as well as better blood pressure, simply from whey protein. So, whey protein has a lot of other things it's good for in terms of helping your body's protein needs in general, getting your day off on the right foot. But there we have it. We have a very interesting blood pressure study, benefits from whey protein. Okay, that's it for the news this week. We'll go now to your questions. All right, and who is first up? This is Ellen, who says she's a 56-year-old female, and she cooks with cast iron skillets. Is there a problem with that? Can I be getting too much iron? How would I know? Thanks so much for your help. Cast iron skillets will leach free iron into the food, and that is the most unstable form of iron to be consuming and would absolutely contribute to any kind of iron problem that I just suggested. And how would you know? You may not know. I mean, you're not going to necessarily have a test. Iron blood tests are unpredictable all over the place and not highly predictive of anything. If you blatantly had too much iron, you could have elevated hemoglobin. But really, what the problem isn't really so much the iron levels, it's the kind of iron you're having go into your system, and that happens to be a highly reactive form. So, even if you can't tell you're having a problem, your body's going to have to deal with it as a problem, as an issue, And I think the point of the study I was just mentioning earlier is that this can be a significant contributing factor to wear and tear over the years and is problematic. So, well, that's that. And you know, if you're going to continue to cook that way, you obviously want to take some iron chelators with your meals. The berries would be good. Of course, coffee is a very good iron chelator. You can't really drink coffee all day long, and you wouldn't want it at night, probably, when you're cooking in your iron skillets. But in general, if you consume coffee with an iron-containing food, you want to absorb the iron very well. But that's kind of a different issue, in a sense. We're talking about free iron getting loose, and an iron skillet or a well water high in iron would be problematic. I had one customer, or not customer, but listener, who was a little bit upset with me, and I forgot to put her question in here. I was going to put it in here and let her know I was going to talk about it, but she was a trigger point therapist and was irritated with me that I was telling people that these lymphatic headaches that start in the back of the neck, and you know, if you manage them, you don't get them, but once they start, they're kind of problematic. She thought that was a disservice to my listeners, and she thought everybody should be doing trigger points, because it worked for her, and then she became a trigger point practitioner. Now, I just want to make a couple of points. When I'm talking to you about health issues, I'm trying to give you nutrition options. I am not an expert in many things relating to health. In other words, most of the physical modalities I wouldn't consider myself an expert in at all. I mean, I dabble in things. I like to exercise and so on. But as far as the practices of different forms of therapy, whether it's trigger points or, you know, chiropractic or, well, you name it, there's many of them. And I think many of these are very helpful for people and so on. But I don't give answers in those contexts. I actually am not an expert in any of them and wouldn't even feel comfortable. That doesn't mean that they aren't valuable and so on. But she was making a big point that what I was saying about headaches just wasn't the case. It was all trigger points. And I actually would like to point out something here. For people's health, one of the shoulder blade, shoulder area, back of the neck, neck area, the pressure that builds up there, the tightness that builds up there is of the most importance to human health, of one of the most important health-related areas of the body that there is. And it is clearly involved with the lymphatic system. And, of course, in my paradigm and way of working with the lymphatic system and trying to help it work better and getting the pressure out of there and getting the waste products out of there and getting the plumbing to move better, I get a lot of benefits with headaches. But let me point out something else. When your lymph system is all congested and you're getting simultaneously a lot of inflammation from the macrophages in the lymphatic system, which communicate directly to the glial cells in the brainstem and then into the brain and the nervous system. So because the lymph system is what it is, and then you get a correlate flare-up in the brainstem and then up into the nervous system, and then the nerves getting flared up then dumps inflammatory chemicals back out nerve endings, and then that sensitizes trigger points. And so to say that the lymph system isn't involved when it is via that mechanism I just described is something to consider. Now, I'm not negating trigger points and using them, because you can approach a problem from both ends. But if you lower the load in the lymphatic system, you'll take pressure out of the brainstem, you'll reduce nerve-related inflammation, and that will then reduce the inflammatory chemicals coming out of nerve endings and banging into tissues around the body. So there is more to it than just the lymph system and where it is. It actually sets off a domino effect that affects headaches in multiple ways. All right, Tom. Says he has a friend who's basically been sent home to die. The root cause is diagnosis of stomach cancer, possibly spread to the liver. He's rejected the triple chemo and is not left with many options. Is raising pH even a worthy pursuit at this point? My layman's understanding is that cancer may thrive in an acid environment. If you are all but dead, is there any benefit risk with radical pH elevation? Are there any methods to accomplish this? Well, you know, Tom, First of all, the advice I'm about to give is not a treatment for cancer, nor do I recommend anybody just stop cancer treatment. I'm a person who believes in doing as much and trying to get medical stuff to work along with natural options as best a person can. But when you get to the point of, you can get to a nutritional point of no return where nothing's going to work, and that's the case for a lot of people with advancing cancer. And on the other hand, I'm the eternal optimist, and many people can turn things around regardless of the situation. So, you know, would raising pH be of benefit? Well, probably. How would you go about radically raising pH? Good question. I mean, you could do various oxygenation therapies, and maybe they would work. Some ozone treatments or things possibly would contribute to improvement in pH. There's a lot of nutrients, but you've got kind of an underlying issue here, Tom. It seems to me that we have a diagnosis of stomach cancer and possibly spread to the liver. So when we're talking about stomach cancer, we're talking about the disruption of the ability to get food into the body. That would be a theme more fundamental than pH. So we're dealing now with an issue where the nutrients can't come in. That creates a chronic inflammatory malnutrition, and that's the problem. So in your friend's situation, the most effective help, if there is going to be any option, is to improve nutritional status and try to keep digesting food and getting easy to use foods in. And this brings me to a point in my story. Because you're gonna, you know, you could make a case for 20 different vitamins and all kinds of therapies possibly, but you know, your friend can't take 20 vitamins. Your friend's stomach won't be able to handle 20 vitamins getting them in. So what can you get in, and what would be the most important things to get in? Well, I'm operating on this theory these days, and I wrote a blog about it earlier this year on what I call BAMLET and HAMLET. And BAMLET stands for bovine alpha lactalbumin made lethal to tumor cells. That's its official scientific name, abbreviated to BAMLET. HAMLET stands for human alpha lactalbumin made lethal to tumor cells. Alpha lactalbumin is a primary protein in dairy. It's in mother's milk. So breast milk's very high in alpha lactalbumin. And breast milk is also very high in oleic acid. And the way that the human body makes HAMLET, or human alpha-lactalbumin, made lethal to tumor cells, is by combining alpha-lactalbumin in the digestive tract with oleic acid. And so when they're combined under the influence of hydrochloric acid in the stomach, then they make HAMLET. And this is most likely why infants who are breastfed don't get cancer, at least while they're being breastfed, because they're being given a major you know, just it's a nutritional thing, but if there were cancer around, it would knock it out. So this BAMLET is a bovine alpha-lactalbumin, meaning we're having essentially a dairy product. Whey protein is, I don't know what it is, it's about 23% alpha-lactalbumin. And oleic acid, of course, is an omega-9 fatty acid. The most common one would be olive oil. So, scientists are busy trying to concoct how these things are made, but you really, the stomach makes it. If there's any hydrochloric acid in there, that might be a bit of an issue for your friend. But my point is very simple. You need your friend needs protein desperately along with other calories, so you might as well give them whey protein anyway. And while you're at it, you might as well throw in some olive oil. You could either mix it in the whey protein or have them consume some olive oil after the whey protein. So a couple tablespoons of olive oil and a serving of whey protein. Now, that may not be the highest, tastiest meal, but at least it's nutrition you can get in, and that kind of nutrition could do him no harm, period, and would be arguably good for him just to try to keep some kind of protein energy nutrition going into his body along with the other calories he consumes. So we're on the one hand, we can say this is just the basic approach to nutrition. But if you go to the website at Wellness Resources and you go in the little search box there and you type in BAMLET and HAMLET and you go read the article, you'll see that there's a number of studies where basically this is probably the most dramatic cancer-killing compound ever made. And You know, you just make it by combining alpha-lactalbumin with oleic acid under the influence of hydrochloric acid. Now, if your your friend's stomach is really bad, you might be able to give him some hydrochloric acid if needed. I don't know if you need to or not. But you could do no harm. And you start killing cancer cells that are there's nothing resistant to this stuff that's known. Now, I obviously don't have any human studies showing what whey protein combined with oleic acid does, but this is like simple science, and it's simple to do, and your friend has nothing to lose, quite frankly, so I think that would be a good suggestion. And then other things that would help him maintain digestive competence would be a good idea. Pete says, every time I fly in an airplane, I feel physically queasy, almost sickish for several days afterwards. I think it might be the smells in the plane that bother me. Is that possible? Well, planes have a lot of chemicals, and that circulating air can be problematic, especially if you have to sit on a runway, which happens more often in the winter, because a lot of times they're de-icing or doing other things, or there's delays and whatnot. And the longer you sit on those runways, the worse it is, but it's still bad anyway. And so that is probably what the queasiness is. It's almost like a toxic exposure. And if you've done enough flying and you've gotten sensitized to those particular chemicals that airplanes produce, it's almost like an allergic reaction where you get a blown out of proportion toxic reaction. I mean, not everybody feels physically queasy for several days, but there are plenty of people who do. Now, I specifically use the Daily Balancer for this, Pete. I think it works really well. Take a couple before you get on the plane. If it's a long flight, take two while you're on. When you get off the plane, take two, and every couple hours, take two until the feeling's gone. A lot of times you won't even get it, and many times it will be gone within the first few hours, and certainly by the next morning. So that will save you your several days of feeling off. Now, of course, I also like the Immune Plus before flying and after flying because of the change in pressure going up and down. This would be certainly true for people who get the shoulder or head pressures while they're flying, or get sick really easily when they fly, or get ear popping, ear ringing that really is bothersome. The Immune Plus works well on that. And while I'm on the subject, the other thing I like in the winter time, because that recirculated air has gazillions of germs in it, is colloidal silver with a nasal spray. So I like the nasal spray. You just spray the colloidal silver up in your sinuses before you get on the plane, or before you leave the house, and then again at the other end. And that can really save some trouble from these airplane flights. So you get a combination of toxins possibly from the plane, germ exposure on the plane, and lymph problems relating to going up and down. So flying can be problematic, and you might as well make it easier and not have issues. Sharon says, after my second child, I started developing facial hair growth when my menstrual cycle started back up. I'm also really tired. Any ideas? Well, facial hair growth is as a result of excessive production of luteinizing hormone, and that's the hormone that stimulates the release of your egg from your from the ovary, and then it goes down the fallopian tube. Anyway, the success with which you do that is straining, and also you say you're tired, which means, you know, you've probably gotten run down probably from the pregnancy and the demands of a little child and so on and so forth. So your menstrual cycle takes a tremendous amount of energy to run, and it's like 8 hours of construction work a day for the week ahead of it, on top of everything else you're already doing. And if you're already tired from the demands, then an extra 8 hours of construction work isn't really any fun, and your body then struggles to regulate correctly. And so one of the regulating points is at your ovulation time midway through the cycle, and if you don't have the good energy level, then you're going to be prone to the excessive release here of androgens, which give you facial hair growth. So I like to smooth out the androgen response. I like the Female Plus two capsules every day. And then whatever it takes to get your energy going, daily energy multi, pantothene, CoQ10, maybe some blood builder with the iron bisglycinate, a safe form of iron in it. These are the kind of things you want to find a strategy, and of course getting enough sleep, but you need to find a strategy where your energy is a lot better. Otherwise, your menstrual cycle will continue to struggle. So it's smoothing out the androgen signaling, that's the Female Plus, and it's supplying energy to the adrenal glands, that's Female Plus, plus, you know, things like pantothene, daily energy, vitamin C. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. But when you get enough support, your energy will be better, and you'll notice that you won't have this problem, Sharon. June wants to know, does acetyl L-carnitine help get rid of white spots on your skin? I think I've, of course, mentioned that acetyl L-carnitine helps get rid of lipofuscin or brown spots on your skin. White spots on the skin are usually melanin inability to synthesize. The most important nutrient for synthesizing melanin is vitamin B12, so a good multiple vitamin usually helps quite a lot. And that would be the most basic nutrient that would be helpful to you, June. Fred says, how important is stretching as a form of exercise? Does it have distinct advantages besides just loosening up? Well, stretching is, you know, besides loosening up, I mean, it's obviously good for loosening up. I like stretching for several reasons. When you stretch your muscles, you release the built-up nerve stagnant byproducts that are between the muscles and the nerves. And so out of your nerve endings, you get a lot of waste products, the demands, the wear and tear, the stressors. You build up these chemicals in your nervous system, and they dump out nerve endings, and they sit there. And so stretching helps release them. So one of the values of stretching, in addition to just doing, you know, getting your muscles loosened up, is actually discharging stagnant nerve inflammatory products out of your muscles. This is, of course, very important for someone with fibromyalgia who has an excess of these. It's important for anybody, but it's important especially the tighter your muscles are, or the more stress you're under, or the more physical pain you're in. Because it actually helps to discharge that. And it does have distinct advantages besides just loosening up, because it conditions the stretching process, turns on genes that are involved with flexibility. And so the more flexible you are, physically speaking, in terms of touching your toes and stretching out and whatnot, the more flexible your arteries are. And so there's parallels between tissue flexibility and artery flexibility, and so much so that enhancing the flexibility of your body will enhance the flexibility of your arteries via turning on gene signaling systems that condition flexibility. So I think that's another advantage besides just loosening up, Fred. So there's a couple of thoughts for you. All right, that's it for your questions this week. Now, if you have a question for me, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more helpful tips and news you can use. Take care. Bye.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem, or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.